I'd have to say one of the most insightful and helpful experiences in my very first ministry was being in the homes of so many people in the church family. Because every weekend I traveled about an hour from college to Monticello, Illinois, where I served as a part-time youth minister, and various family members would sign up in the church to host me and provide me a place to sleep and feed me, for which I was very, very grateful. And it was eye-opening. It really helped me to get to know these families much better than I would have just in the church building. So I saw them on their home turf. And I could see them in their personal setting and in their personal interactions with each other. And so what I did is I just did family life with them. Whatever they did, I did it when I was free from other responsibilities at church. So I ate with them. We played games together, swapped stories, laughed a lot. I mean, if they were going to a ball game, I went with them. If they were raking leaves, I helped out. You know, we just did things together. And they got to know me a lot better, and I got to know them a lot better. It gave me valuable insights into the youth as I stayed in their various homes. And really, what happened is once I stayed with the family in their home, then they felt more connected with me, and they were more invested in the ministry of the church, the youth ministry. So some families signed up to host me frequently, like at least once a month. And so I got particularly close with those families, and I've remained close friends with them through the year. So it was valuable. It was insightful for me to see where people live. Your neighborhood, where you come from, where you live, it really says a lot about you. Your home life and your family, your culture shapes you. It's a part of your story, a part of your identity. Stepping into another person's culture or neighborhood or home will open your eyes about them and help you understand them better. Perhaps you had no clue what it's like to live in their world, in their kind of circumstances. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm particularly drawn to people from other cultures, other nations. I'm fascinated by their stories, and I like to compare, see the similarities and the differences between their lifestyle, their culture, and mine. You know, and so I'm intrigued by that. I always enjoy that. It's eye-opening. My brother sent pictures and videos of some of the destructions in Lake Charles, Louisiana, where he lives. And we've seen it in the news, and we can kind of imagine what it was like. But I didn't fully grasp it. I didn't get the whole picture until I went where he lives and saw it firsthand last week when we were helping in the hurricane relief. Wow, it was eye-opening. See, we're in the process of learning from Jesus how to make it personal in our relationships. And as we build relationships, I think we have to always realize that people are wondering, do you know my name? Do you know who I am? They want to know. And do you know what matters to me? Do you know what I really care about? You know what's on my mind? And today's question is, do you know where I live? And now we use that question, do you know where I live, with to both literally and figuratively. Do you know where I'm coming from? How would you like to live in my shoes for a day? If you knew what I have been through, if you knew where I live, if you knew what I'm going through right now, you'd understand why I think the way I do, feel the way I do, do what I do. Two of the biggest phrases being tossed around freely today are privilege and lived experience. And the charge is, you're privileged, so you just wouldn't understand. Or you haven't lived through what I've had to live through, so there's no way you can comprehend. Now, some assumptions are being made on both sides of that, but what I'm advocating today is to make efforts to communicate, to fellowship, to experience, to share openly, so that we can know better where each other lives, where we're coming from, so we can have better community and overcome some of the things that keep us apart. We can make it personal by starting with Jesus. So will you open your Bibles with me to Mark's Gospel, chapter 1. We're going to look at verses 29 through 31 today. We've been looking at how Jesus approached and engaged with the disciple Peter, Simon Peter, and how Jesus used these five different questions that people have in their minds when we engage them. And so Jesus used that to build relationships. So let's see how he did with Peter, starting with verse 29. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. And Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever. And they told Jesus about her, and so he went to her, and he took her hand and helped her up. And the fever left her, and she began to wait on them. Wow, what a special moment. See Jesus go where people live. I mean, if you really watch, just watch Jesus go where people live. He makes it personal. He went to Peter's house. You see, we can't charge the Lord with not knowing. He knows where you live. He knows where you're coming from. Because first of all, Jesus knows where we live because Jesus knows everything. He knows everything. He's omniscient. He's all-knowing. He's all-seeing. He's God. Psalm 139 begins, "O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out, my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely." And then verse 16 adds, "All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." So your life is not predetermined. That's not what that means. You make your own choices. But the point is, God sees everything even before you live it. He sees it. He knows you rather well. He gets you when no one else does. He knows what you've been through. He knows how you feel. He knows what motivates you, haunts you, what oppresses you, or excites you. The Lord knows how many hairs are on your head at any given moment without even counting. He knows. He knows because He's God. And He doesn't have to experience it to know and understand. But so that we know that He knows, God came near. Jesus knows where we live because Jesus lived here. It's not just that He knows everything. He lived here. We call that incarnation. When God put on flesh and became a human being like us in the person of Jesus. Now, I can't understand how God could become a man. I don't understand that. But I accept it. I believe it. And He's God. He can do anything. And so we have lived experience. God's been where we live. John 1, verse 14 declares, "The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us." Philippians 2:7 explains, "He emptied Himself, taking on the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men." Hebrews 4:15 assures, "For we don't have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin." He's talking about Jesus. Hebrews 2:14 adds, "Since the children have flesh and blood, He too shared in their humanity." Incarnation. Jesus knows where He lived because He lived it. Kobe Person is a 23-year-old millionaire who hit the streets pretending to be poor and homeless just to see how he would be treated. And he was treated far worse than he ever expected he would be. Humiliated, harassed, dismissed, chased away, even threatened. And now he knows at least a bit of what it's like to be poor and homeless. Jesus shows us that He knows what it's like to walk in our shoes. Jesus knows firsthand what physical suffering is like in a human body. He knows heartbreak. He knows success and temptation and fatigue and family. He knows what it's like to deal with other people. He knows the loss of loved ones, rejection, persecution. He knows hard work and homelessness and hunger. He knows firsthand disappointment, betrayal, pressure, and conflict. He knows where we live because He lived it. He lived it. Thirdly, Jesus knows where we live because Jesus cares for individuals. He goes where we live. You know, one of the things that we love about Jesus when we read the Gospels is that his heart goes out to people and he gets involved in their lives and does amazing things out of compassion. Jesus made house calls. Over and over we see that. I don't know if you notice how frequently Jesus went to people's homes. He went to where people live in order to minister to them or even just to have fellowship with them. And all types of people, from the nobility to the religious to the friend to friends to outcasts to the ungodly, he went and mixed it up with them, went right into their homes. Let me give you a quick sampling of that in the Gospels. Luke 14:1 says, he went to the house of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread. Matthew 9:23 says, when Jesus came into the official's house and saw the flute players and the crowd in noisy disorder. Mark 14:3 says, while he was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper and reclining at the table. Luke 10:38 says, a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Luke 5:29 says, and Levi gave a big reception for him in his house, and there was a great crowd of tax collectors there. Luke 19:5 says, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for today I must stay at your house. That's what Jesus said. Luke 7:66, so Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself. I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. Jesus was going to his house to heal him. He said, you can do this long distance. You don't even have to come. Matthew 26:18, my time is near. I am to keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. And Luke 22:54, having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. Jesus was everywhere. And as we already noted, Jesus went to Simon Peter's house. Very personal. Okay. In his letter to the church at Pergamum, Jesus said, I know where you live. I know where you live. And I dare say he knows where you live. He's been to your house, in your life. He knows and cares about your heart, your plight, your opportunities, and your thinking. He knows where you live, and he cares very much about it. And fourthly, Jesus knows where we live because he lives in us. He lives in us. When we were baptized into Christ, Acts 2:38 says Christ came to dwell within us in the form of his Spirit. Galatians 3:27 says, for all of you who have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. Colossians 1:27 speaks of Christ in you, the hope of glory. Jesus said, if a man abides in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. And Ephesians 3:16 and 17, Paul prays, I pray out of his glorious riches that he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And that's insider knowledge. And that's deeply personal. Jesus is very intimate with us. If anyone knows where you're coming from, it's Jesus. And that's the way he does relationships. And that's what he's trying to teach us to do. Jesus makes it purposeful with the purpose of discipling us. That's why he gets so close. It's to disciple us. So watch what happens next. See Simon Peter go to where people live. See, a disciple is an apprentice. And the goal is not mere imitation. The goal is to actually become like the master. You know, where you have the same character, the same motive, the same actions as the master. You're not just imitating. He becomes a part of you. Peter observed Jesus. He followed Jesus. He went wherever Jesus went and did whatever Jesus did. Jesus and company were received in many homes throughout the ministry. And then the teacher turned around and sent his disciples to do what he had been doing. So in Matthew 10, verses 11 through 14, it says, Jesus told his disciples, in whatever city or village you enter, inquire who's worthy in it and stay at his house until you leave that city. As you enter the house, give it your greeting. If the house is worthy, give it your blessing of peace. But if it's not worthy, take back your blessing of peace. Whoever does not receive you nor heed your words as you go out of that city, of that house and that city, shake the dust off your feet. And so that's what they did. Peter and the other disciples went out to various villages with the gospel, and they went to many homes and they stayed there. They saw where people lived. They mixed it up on a personal level. When Jesus eventually returned to heaven, Peter and the rest of the apostles continued what they had learned from Jesus. For example, when the good woman Dorcas died, the people were grieving, and they sent word for the renowned preacher to come. Peter, come. In Acts chapter 9, verse 38 and 39 tells us, since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that Peter was there, sent two men to him, imploring him, do not delay in coming to us. And so Peter arose and went with them. And when he arrived, they brought him into the upper room. And all the widows stood beside him and weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas had used to make while she was with them. You know, countless times I've been called to the death scene. And let me tell you, in those moments, words are not adequate. Words are not adequate. And I don't know if that crusty old fisherman really wanted to be the comforter in this situation, but he went. That's what Jesus had taught him to do. And Peter met with those people in their grief, and he brought Jesus with him into their situation. Go where people are living and get into their lives and get into their struggles and be with them. That's how you build relationship. Another time, messengers came to entreat Peter to come once again, this time to the home of Cornelius. Now, Peter had been a devout Jew, and he carefully followed the laws and traditions regarding any associations and what was clean and unclean. And, for example, you never go into a Gentile's home. That would make you unclean. But the Spirit convicted him to go with these men. And he answered the door. They said, Cornelius, a Roman centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the entire nation of the Jews, has become divinely directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and to hear a message from you. So Peter went to the house of Cornelius, and he entered this Gentile's home, and he heard his story, and he shared the gospel with him, and he ended up baptizing the whole household. And against the grain of his Jewish culture and upbringing, he stayed in that Gentile's home for several days. And this was a monumental, this was a historic breakthrough. The gospel began expanding from that time to the entire Gentile world because Peter went into where Cornelius lived. And I'm wondering what barriers can come down in our communities if we will follow Jesus and go where people who are different than us live. If we'll go to anybody where they live and bring Jesus with us. So that brings us to the final revelation and the great challenge of this teaching. This is where Jesus makes it personal for each one of us. See yourself go where people live. See yourself go. You know, if you're following Jesus, you will make a point to get into the lives of others and see where they live and go to their homes and break bread with them and work to grasp where people are coming from, just like Jesus did, just like Peter did. You're going to do the same thing. You're not just going to their physical address, that's important, but we're going to try to get familiar with the address of their experience, the address of their perspective, their daily reality, sharing presence and understanding, suffering, and blessing. You know, you learn a lot about a person when you actually see where they live. By Jesus going to Simon Peter's home, we learn some things. There's a lot of things that we learn about Peter. Now, this photo that you see is thought to be the ruins of the home of Peter. Clues come from the etchings and things that are found there at this location. Capernaum was a fishing and agricultural village on the northwest side of the Sea of Galilee where Peter lived. And this particular house was an extended family or multi-generational household, which was not uncommon in that time and in that culture. And so several generations and relatives lived together in this house, including at least Peter and Andrew and their families and Peter's mother-in-law. We know that they all lived there because this text, this few sentences in Mark's gospel, tell us this. Now, Peter obviously cared about his family, and he had some responsibilities in regard to his family. Leaving his fishing boat and following Jesus was costly to him and his family, I think, although the other family members may have kept the business going while he was away, the times when he was away, but maybe that's also why Peter kept coming back here, why this was a place where they kept returning so that he could keep up the business. And we see also in this setting, this account, that the women typically provided service and care for the family, while the men provided the way of living. They provided the resources going to work, and that's why we understand that Peter's mother-in-law, once she was healed, she got up and started serving. And not only accentuated the nature of the miracle, but she did what she was typically doing in the home. Women did those jobs. And so we see that in Peter's background. It helps us understand him and his culture better. It's evident that the family freely offered hospitality. That would have been another common thing among the Jews there. It appears Capernaum became a home base for Jesus throughout his ministry. Perhaps he even stayed at Peter's home whenever they were there. I think that's likely. Now, we know from the context that this city of Capernaum witnessed many miracles of Jesus. Many. And yet they rejected Jesus. And Jesus condemned them. So the point of all this is that Peter's home life shaped who he was. And Peter went to where, and Jesus went to where Peter lived so that he would know him better, know where he's coming from. I took an online I Know Where You Live quiz, and it was really interesting. It surprisingly is able to discern at least the general part of the country that you're from, the region that you're from, just by answering these 20 questions about life. And so the thing is, we're shaped by our environment, by our surroundings and experiences. It shapes who we are and the way we think and what we do. Now, I know the coronavirus limits us at the moment. But, you know, as conditions allow, I want to encourage you to get into people's homes and at least get into their lives. It's going to open your mind, open your eyes. What is it like to be a Black American, a Hispanic, an Asian American? What's it like being a single mother? What's it like being a middle-aged straight white guy? What's it like to be an orphan or disabled or betrayed or a criminal or a soldier? What's it like to be an elite athlete or a widow or a teenager, a store owner, an employer? What's it like to be rejected, terminally ill, to be a rich person or a poor person? What's it like to be in jail, a celebrity, a first responder, an immigrant? What's it like to deal with gender dysphoria or to be gay? What's it like to be that kid who's standing in the corner or suffering a debilitating illness or mental health problems or living in a nursing home right now? What's that like? I don't know if you ever wonder, what's it like to be a preacher? What's life like for him? You also gain a new level of connection where you go when you go where others live. It bonds you. The famed To Kill a Mockingbird lawyer, Jake, says to his client, Carl Lee, "I'm your friend, Carl Lee." "We ain't no friends, Jake. We're on different sides of the line. I ain't never seen you in my part of town. I bet you don't even know where I live. Our daughters, Jake, they ain't never going to play together. Man, that is so revealing. We must break down those walls on a personal, relational level. That's what this is largely about. It has to be on a personal, relational level. And we see where each other lives. And so, you start going to someone's home and eating at their table, and your relationship goes up a notch. I believe Jesus is going to Peter's home, and it enriched their friendship and empowered Jesus to be able to disciple him more effectively. I can't begin to count the number of times that I've been in people's homes in my lifetime and in my ministry. And I always feel honored when someone opens up and lets me in. Not just into their physical dwelling, that's important, but into their heart and lives and minds as they share themselves. So when they open up, those personal contacts help me to better enter their world and understand and relate and serve them. A few months ago, I shared with you about Daniel Strickland being invited to speak at a large Christian youth event in Detroit. I want to share this account again because it's so fitting to what we're talking about. She looked out at the crowd of thousands, and she was stunned because 60% of the crowd were white youth, and they were all seated on one side, and 40% were African American, and they were all seated on the other side with a clear line of division between them. And when it was her turn to speak, she proclaimed, "This division in this room is not what the gospel looks like. It's unity and reconciliation. The gospel is for all of us, and it's good news that unites us across our barriers." Well, some groups started to get up and leave when she said that. They didn't want to hear this message. But that didn't stop her. She kept speaking, and she challenged them from 2 Corinthians 5:16. "So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view." And then she presented a very specific, bold, practical application. She said, "I want you to get up out of your seats and cross the aisles and get a phone number from someone who's different than you and go to their house for dinner." It was an awkward and beautiful moment when slowly the young people got up and they mixed and they exchanged numbers. Years later, a young woman approached Danielle and shared that she was a part of the crowd that day in Detroit. She said, "I exchanged phone numbers with a girl and she invited me to her home, and I was nervous and scared because it was in a part of town in which I never go. And I had all kinds of presuppositions about what my experience might be there. But that family treated me so warmly." She said, "They were much like my family. And we've been great friends ever since." You see, going and knowing where a person lives disrupts division. It creates unity, community. It's got to be on that relational level. When young Gabriel Marshall from Kansas was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor on March 2015, the resulting surgery left him with a sizable scar on the side of his head. And so, to boost his son's confidence, Gabriel's father, Josh Marshall, got his son's scar tattooed on his own head to show his solidarity with his son in a very beautiful way. And as you can imagine, the photo went viral on social media. But it's a great illustration. When you go where people live, man, it bonds you. It connects you personally. And you find opportunities to serve when you know where people live. Entering the world of others informs you about needs and, in fact, arms you with ways to respond. You understand better what they're feeling and experiencing or going through, and you're able to respond to that. At Peter's home, Jesus saw a need, and he healed Peter's mother-in-law, and it blessed the whole family. It meant a lot to them. Perhaps as you encounter people in your neighborhood or school or business, you know, you notice there's this teenage son that needs a father-like mentor, or there's this overwhelmed young mom who needs advice and encouragement from someone who's already been through all that. Maybe there's a way to help a family financially, or you see there's a tree fallen in their yard and they need help getting it cut up in the lumber stack. Maybe a babysitter is needed, or you could offer rides for someone going through chemo treatments. Today, we're celebrating Caleb's Adoption Day in our household. And when Brenda and I returned from that long journey from states away with our new baby, we came home to our house surprised to find stacks of gifts and supplies from our church family that you had showered us with gifts. And the thing is, we hadn't told very many people, just a couple people. Had we told that we were adopting, but somebody knew where we lived, and they responded to the need, and we appreciate it. Finally, I want you to understand that you have powerful influence when you open your home, when you let people into your home, into your lives. So can I urge you to leverage where you live? You know, privilege and blessings are not something to be ashamed of. They're things that call to be acknowledged, shared, even laid down and leveraged for the kingdom of Jesus. And hardships. Hardships and disadvantages are not something to be ashamed of either. Because they have shaped you. They've trained you as you've learned to cope. And those experiences have equipped you to help others or inform others. If you'll just leverage where you live for Jesus. If you'll just open up your life, open up your home. Opening our homes to friends and neighbors makes it personal and allows you to disciple as they see up close how you live and walk with Jesus. It's powerful. So would you open your home to someone who's very different from you to share a meal at your table? Can your barbecue grill on your deck, or the Keurig in your kitchen, or the swing set in your backyard become a place of communion and discipling and breaking barriers? Can it happen? Today, I'm wondering if you will welcome Jesus into where you live. You open your life to Him, open your heart to Him. Will you allow Him to come in? Will you follow Him with a commitment to become more aware of where people live and build those relationships? You know, if you'd like to call me at 251-2232, we'll talk about maybe being baptized and following Jesus or anything else that I can help you with.